Hello, everyone. Welcome to Community Calendar. I'm Kathleen, your reader for the Community Calendar this week. And I'm going to be reading from the Flagstaff Live. And here is our first article. Hopefully you've enjoyed the articles that I've selected for you. Matter of Taste, Threes in the Trees is serving up Wheelie Good Eats. That's kind of fun. And that's written by Gail G. Collins, food columnist, and it was only written 4 hours ago. There's a picture of a food truck, which is what this story is about. Owning and manning a food truck is a flexible, lower-cost option for feeding people almost anywhere. With portable power and streamlined menu choices, it's an appealing means to enter the food trade or expand an entity. It also creates quirky catering possibilities. As an alternative to a traditional restaurant, a food truck can withstand societal storms such as pandemic with an adaptable presence and needs. Still, there is another reality. Getting behind the wheel and the window of a food truck is hard work. The legal and financial challenges are cumbersome to start. Moreover, the long hours and tasks are demanding, ranging from prep to travel to serving in niche destinations. With low overhead and staff comes a need for an owner to do it all, purveying, driving, cooking, in addition to accounting and marketing, to name a few. There is a weather to endure, space limitations, and short order turnarounds, and then the quest for the ideal spot to connect with customers. Passion is a must. You need to be a master mechanic, master electrician, and master plumber, said Augie Herring, co-owner of Threes in the Trees food truck, alongside Rusty Montoya. We have been towed to an event and back again. The hardest part is dealing with plumbing and freezes. But he stressed, pointing to their transport and kitchen, the hardest working partner is Clifford, the big red truck. For all of their efforts, the pair has won Best Food Truck by the readers of the Arizona Daily Sun for 7 years running, and this year was awarded Best Catering. It was an awesome surprise, Herring noted with satisfaction. We will push forward with catering and build on what we've begun. We're not limited to any kind of food. He's got right next to that, there's a picture which looks delicious, of a hearty green chili chicken stew served with toasted sourdough bread bowl topped with cheese. Yum. Montoya chimed in, a lot of emphasis and pride goes into our food. We are asked to come back by our guests at our events. We build to suit for catering within budgets. From serving 200 employees of Gore to feeding 30 at Grand Canyon Shoshone Point with a storm on the horizon, to catering a private supper for 10, Threes in the Trees is versatile. Whether it's a Mexican buffet, barbecue, prime rib, Asian fusion, Italian, or fried turkey, the guys have got the skills. They have even built a wedding reception menu from items on offer at the weekly farmers market. During the winter, Threes in the Trees contracts with Flagstaff Snow Park to fill bellies with hearty kid-friendly fares, serving stews, chili, and burgers. Because of this, people struggle to define the food truck's wares. Since its inception in 2015, Montoya said 30 items have evolved and settled where people won't let us take them off the menu. Heat is prevalent as he incorporates his New Mexico hatch green chilies. Herring's link with Panama City, Florida, meanwhile, produces elements such as plantains and empanadas. We keep it distinct, Herring added. The goal is clean, handheld food you can walk down the street and eat. Although we've got another delicious picture of Southwest Philly cheesesteak and then a taco trio basket and fried Brussels sprouts, meh, and blue cheese and balsamic reduction. Okay, so those look yummy as well. An example is their most popular and original items, the Tex Arizona Brisket Green Chili Taco. The Kona sandwich was on the menu from the beginning, boasting success in its simplicity. 20 ingredients formulate the dry rub for the pulled pork, scratch barbecue sauce topped with grilled pineapple. The chili relleno macaroni and cheese is spicy, made with house-wide queso plus serrano, poblano, and jalapeno peppers, sporting a crumble of tortilla chips atop. It sells out routinely. For vegetarians, that's not cauliflower tacos, are unique and vegan without the cheese. Desert temps with the cheesecake cookie, more a tart that is tedious to make and easy to love. The food truck owners met at Ski Lift Lodge running the hotel, bar, and restaurant. Herring as kitchen head and Montoya as front of the house, also covering for one another as needed. Perhaps that is what makes for such a tight team, plus the back and forth as they finish one another's sentences. We appreciate the locals and regulars who've shown us support. The whole town shows us support, they said in turns. We've met so many owners and been to every brewery. People are so nice to us. We've been very fortunate and appreciative of everyone we've met. It's a long list. All right. That was making me hungry. I don't know about you all. All right. Now, Pages of the Pines, Breaking Barriers, Tracing the Journey of Two Women's Discovery Along the Colorado River. And this is Sabrina Grimaldi. It's a book review that was written a couple of hours ago. Medicine, science, math, history. These are just a few among the topics that were once reserved for men. Even today, in the 21st century, women are still breaking through boundaries and finding footing in fields that were recently not allowed in. When it comes to history, it seems our country was built on the decisions, often mistakes, of men. Though occasionally it is revealed that behind major inventions, revolutionary discoveries, and the creation of our nation were women who have since been uncredited. Often these prominent women aren't credited until decades after their death, their lives' work being handed off to men around them. American geneticist Nettie Stevens discovered the X and Y chromosomes and their role in sex determination in 1905, but she wasn't credited for decades. American astronomer Vera Rubin, who pioneered work on galaxy rotation rates, is another example. While studying at the Carnegie Institution, she was even discouraged from accessing the observatory because it only had male bathrooms. The 2016 film Hidden Figures sheds light on Katherine Johnson, Dorothy Vaughan, and Mary Jackson, three African-American women at NASA who were the brains behind the launch of astronaut John Glenn into orbit. Brave the Wild River, the untold story of two women who mapped the botany of the Grand Canyon by Melissa L. Sevigny, unveils the tale of Elzada Clover and Lois Jodder, American botanists who set off down the Colorado River in 1938, determined to be the first to survey the Grand Canyon's plants. Science journalist Seveni decodes the letters and diaries of the two women, detailing their dangerous journey. Much like the historically overlooked scientists of their past, Clover and Jodder are met with gender norms they are determined to crash through. The botanists joined four men across three boats on a journey of over 600 miles down the Colorado, collecting and surveying specimens of plant life. Upon their journey, the media was appalled, stating that women, while they have a place in the world, have no place in the canyon of the Colorado. While they were initially met with concern of the danger of their journey, they eventually turned their heads of even the harshest critics. While a recollection of any scientific discovery is at a risk of reading too technical and at times boring, Savini's voice is engaging and even funny. Paired with an insane amount of research and obvious dedication to telling the woman's stories correctly, Savini makes the story a fun one to read. As you flip through the pages, you can imagine yourself on the river raft, seeing the canyons, cliffs, plants, rushing water, and risking your life in the name of science. Even while they are on the road, Clover and Jodder prove that a woman's work is never done. Pardon me. Becoming matriarchs for the men they accompany, the duo single-handedly makes discoveries no one else has before. all while tending to the fire, making breakfast, and completing their daily duties, sometimes before the men had even woken up. While some might see Savini's retelling as a simple modern-day feminist story, it is that, but so much more. The author does a fantastic job balancing the factual work and discoveries made by Clover and Jotter and pairing it with the sexism that they faced in the world, in the field. It is a story of overcoming odds, and it is also a story of botany and history lovers alike can enjoy. While focusing on the scientific work alone is what Clover and Jotter were begging the media for at that time, it would be remiss to leave out the hardships they went through simply because they were women. As Savini writes, like others before them, Elzada Clover and Lois Jotter valued their curiosity about the world more than their presumed place within it. This novel is a beckoning call for us all to let our curiosity about the world guide us, no matter how society might want you to act. So again, the name of that book is Brave the Wild River, the Untold Story of Two Women Who Mapped the Botany of the Grand Canyon by Melissa L. Savigny, and I'm probably mispronouncing her name, but it's Sevigny. Sounds like a good read. All right, and next we have Letters from Home. Oh my, poo-poo sauce, puzzles, and other soft returns. No music today, and this is, this doesn't say who the author, oh, Kate King. This was written on April 14th. No music today, just a sigh and a lime mead that tastes like summer tail was flickering. I hiked in Sandy's Canyon last week and had nothing profound to say about it. The person walking with me says that a lot. Sometimes there's just nothing to say. I think there is wisdom in that and also complacency depending on the moment. As usual, I find myself half inspired and half annoyed. For a writer, that's hard. And as someone who gets paid for having something to say, I'm glad I have a lot on my mind. But I'm getting used to the discomfort of not having anything to say, especially about the progress of moving back home, which is currently held up by several factors. Permits, grants, knowledge of my own, it's all at a standstill. In the meantime, yellow tulips and buds sprout in the backyard. It doesn't need me to know. Spring hasn't exactly arrived. It's just beginning to exhale with some snow-filled sneezes. The ground is still cold, but the light lasts longer. Things are loosening. This spring's return to snow felt wonderfully healing. After a brittle, snowless winter that cracked something open in all of us, emotionally and ecologically, it seemed as if something was being undone. For months, it felt like we skipped my favorite season. When the snow came back, even briefly, it was like the earth was saying, sorry, I ghosted. I hiked Fat Man's Loop too a few weeks back. I'm not a Flagstaff's most devoted hiker, and I've lived here long enough to know that's practically a confession. I'm the opposite of a gearhead. 6 months typically go by before I realize I must do something. I think I hike more frequently in Sedona. Do I love hiking? Yes, I absolutely do. I return to the trails I've hiked since childhood, slowly and in light snow, ideally with a film camera where I take a whole roll within the first 10 minutes and am slowing everyone else down. I would like someone else to carry a water bottle. If I carry my own, I have to pee too often. I often don't make it to the end of the trail. Ideally, there would be snack breaks. I was raised here, and that's how I like to hike. I forget sunscreen, too, almost every day of the year. But even though I'm not in the cool or even safe zone for hiking, I absolutely do love it. I just wouldn't put it on, say, a Tinder profile. I feel anyone who hikes here thinks of it as too serious of a business. My son has been into the New York Times puzzle lately, and he's reading Shipwreck at the Bottom of the World and the Dorito Effect, a combination that somehow makes sense in his curious brain. His return to reading feels like what we've been doing at home anyway, if, say, it had all just been a nightmare. The kids read more than I do, but I have been enjoying movies like Perfect Days and Patterson, slowly grounding and poetic. I remember my younger mom days where reading was a lifestyle at Bookman's and the library. I miss those. He lost his first tooth at Bookman's, browsing new children's books on library shelves like treasure. I may not be able to return to my home, but there are places I can return to. In March, I traveled for spring break and then for a writing conference, Phoenix and then LA. Somehow, pupusas followed us across state line. I hope I'm saying that right, folks. In LA, I braved a too long Amtrak ride that reminded me my body isn't 20 anymore. The seat was stiff, and what we can't return to again was noticed. While we were gone, I found myself missing small things that still felt like mine, like a meadery in the Timberline ice cream, places that weren't my house but still offered the sense of return. We lose so much in a fire, but these constants, something sweet, something familiar, something you can still taste, have become a doorknob to healing. I'm slightly embarrassed to be inspired by Johnsonville's Keep It Juicy campaign. The commercial hit a nerve with how I feel most of my existence is digital these days. Human interaction almost impossible to come by. Sure, I may be seen at the literary festival, a church, or at work, but an invitation to hang out in person from anyone other than my home trio is nearly impossible. I used to long for a return to pre-COVID social connection, but really, that was just one mom who texted me and never wanted to hang out. I'm not even sure where to return to socially. Maybe long phone calls? Maybe New York City? Maybe having a band? Where we are somewhere between the damage and the dream, in that strange space where presence matters more than progress. And maybe parenting a preteen is a kind of rebuilding too. Raw, sometimes overwhelming, you start realizing both what can't be fixed and what doesn't need to be. For the moment, my son wants to sing Blackbird. Aw, so we do. That's really sweet. You're tuned in to Sun Sounds of Arizona, and we have been serving Arizona since 1979, providing audio access to information to listeners in Arizona. All right, now on to a grand collaboration, local music groups to close out Flagstaff Symphony Organizations, also known as FSO, season with a monumental performance. I've got a beautiful picture of the orchestra. And this was written by Moriah Heberer, a niche editor, on April 15th. The Flagstaff Symphony Orchestra, FSO, is set to close out its 75th season with a collaborative performance of Giuseppe Verdi's Messa de Requiem, with vocal accompaniment from both Master Chorale of Flagstaff and Northern Arizona University Shrine of Ages Choir. These three large forces will bring a powerful performance of one of the greatest orchestral compositions ever written. Audience members will recognize the Dies Irae, sorry about that, from the piece, which has been featured in several movies, and we are very excited about such a large community collaboration, FSO Executive Director Michelle Wachter said. Verdi's composition of Requiem began after the death of opera composer Gioachino Rossini in 1868. Verdi hoped to commemorate the anniversary of his passing with the Requiem Mass, a Catholic Church tradition to honor the deceased, and started to put together the piece of music with contributions from some of the most prominent Italian composers of time. For one reason or another, the plans fell through and Verdi was left with an unfinished piece of music. Then, in 1873, novelist poet Alessandro Manzoni died, whom Verdi greatly admired. He proposed a Requiem Mass for the first anniversary of Manzoni's passing. This time, however, it would be completely his own work. He used his previous composition and finished the remainder of the piece, and it was performed in the Church of San Marco in Milan in 1874. Charles Latshaw's FSO music director and conductor said that a piece of this magnitude only comes up every few decades for a conductor. It's such a masterpiece, and I want to do it justice, he said. Our orchestra hasn't played in well over 20 years, so it's a great opportunity to celebrate FSO's position in the arts of Flagstaff for the last 75 years and to do a big project. Latshaw has been preparing for the performance of Requiem since December. The FSO musicians have been working independently on their musical parts, while the Shrine of Ages and Master Chorale each have their own rehearsal times. They all come together only days before the performance. We put the choirs and the orchestras together for just 4 days, and the soloists who sing the big operatic roles in this piece won't join us until Wednesday, Latshaw said. I love this process where everybody is working on their own and we check in with each other, but then we all slam it together and the show happens Friday. I'm feeling very ready and excited about it. Timothy Westerhaus is the director of choral studies at NAU and the chorus master for the student group Shrine of the Ages. He began preparing the score for this performance last summer and rehearsals kicked off in mid-February. Eric Betts is the rehearsal conductor for Master Chorale of Flagstaff, and they began practicing around the same time. The two choirs have never rehearsed together, but I have gone between the two of them, making sure that we're as unified as possible, Westerhaus said. There are 49 singers in the Shrine of Ages and 67 in the Master Chorale, making a grand total of 116 singers on stage for Friday's performance. The collaboration between these groups is a yearly tradition, Westerhaus said, highlighting that there's something special about all these musicians coming together. Verdi's Requiem is definitely what we would call a masterpiece, a master work of the classical tradition. Each year we try to vary the style, the compositional genre on the composer's background so that we have a varied experience, he said. One moment of the performance that most audience members may recognize is the Dies Irae, which has been used in several movies due to its dark and dooming sound. It's about the Day of Wrath and the Day of Reckoning, Latshaw explains. It's extraordinary music, the kind of thing that grabs your attention from the start. However, Latshaw's personal favorite moment to look forward to is when four extra trumpet players will be playing scattered throughout the auditorium. Well, that's exciting. He referred to them as the trumpets of doom. The experience of hearing trumpets calling from around the room and you're not exactly sure where they are and then adding it to the sound of the orchestra is absolutely electrifying, he said. It happened for only about 2.5 minutes out of the whole 90-minute piece, but it makes it all worth it while to me. The magic and the majesty of that sound is really special. Westerhaus appreciates how the music embodies the Italian character and draws out dramatic, expressive opera, when he noted not only sounds good to hear, but also feels good to sing. His favorite moment is the lacrimosa, a Latin term meaning weeping or tearful. This is a moment when you feel such tenderness for a dear loved one that may have passed away, and it's just the most glorious sound, Westerhaus said. I think whether you are a singer, a musician, on stage in the audience, it's an experience that's raw and vulnerable in a very real way. I don't know if we have time to play this, but let me see what happens. So that's just a little example of Westerhaus singing the Lacrimosa. Attendees can look forward to plenty more emotional moments in this iconic musical work. It's rare for this large work to be performed, so it's just a real unique opportunity to experience something truly special, Westerhaus added. With so much of the music community coming together, I hope our broader Flagstaff community comes out in full force to enjoy it. As FSO prepares for its 75th season to come to a close, Latshaw points out what a milestone it is for Flagstaff to have a professional orchestra staffed by local musicians for decades It's extraordinary, the kind of musical support we've had in the community and the way that it has raised the level of music programs in schools and feeds into NAU's School of Music, he said. It's an incredible legacy, and the opportunity that we can put 200 performers on stage and 1,000 people in the audience and have this great communal experience, that really can't be replaced. Support the Flagstaff Symphony Orchestra alongside the Master Chorale and the NAU Shrine of Ages at 7:30 p.m. this Friday, April 18th. More information can be found at flagstaffsymphony.org. All right, I think that we've run out of time because there's been so much fun things to read. I'm going to see if there's anything I can pull from the Pulse for you. Let's see if we've got anything specific. Today is April 17th. We'll go ahead and start there. We've got Hemlock, heavy metal bands from Las Vegas at the Orpheum Theater. Doors open at 6 p.m. Show starts at 7 p.m. $27. Earth, rock band at the Coconino Center for the Arts. It's today as well. 7:30 p.m. Costs $25 to $30. Friday and Saturday, 4:18 and 4:19, Pride's Crossing by Tina Howe. NAU Theater Department play at the NAU Performing and Fine Arts Building at 7:30 p.m. The cost is $18 to $30. Friday, April 18th, Sensitivity to Sound Fest, live music, skating, fashion, and local vendors at the Union Fieldhouse at NAU. That seems interesting. At 6 p.m. and the cost is $12. Verdi's Requiem, Flagstaff Symphony Orchestra concert. And that is at the Ardrey Auditorium at NAU at 7:30 p.m. Cost is anywhere from $8 to $74.50. I've been in the, you know, the $8 seats, and I've been in the seats up close, and I think it's just you can hear the music anywhere you sit. Gasolina, reggaeton and Latin music at the Orpheum Theater. This is still on, what are we doing here? Friday. That must be reggae at the Orpheum Theater. Doors open at 8, shows at 9, cost $27, and it says free. So there's a little bit of a discrepancy. It says cost $27, cost free. So I'm not sure what the cost is there. Saturday, April 19th, an adult workshop, Moral Mushrooms. Learn about eating a fungi from Mike Dechter at the Willow Bend Environmental Education Center, 9 to 11, $25 to $30, registration required. Flagstaff Reoccurring Record Show. Shop 1,000 LPs and 45s with live DJs all day at the American Legion, Mark A. Moore Post 3, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., and that is free. It is also Earth Day, music, food, presenters, and more at Bushmasters Park in East Flagstaff, 11 to 2. That's a free event. Easter egg hunts. Find eggs filled with toys, bracelets, trinkets, and more at the Arizona Snow Bowl, 12:15 to 1, and that cost is free. Earth Jam 2025, live music and activities. Northern Arizona University, 3 to 7. That's a free event. Cosmic Sounds and Flowing Colors, a relaxation workshop using light, color, and sound. Momentum Aerial, 7 p.m., and that's $15. Scary Kids Scaring Kids. Post-hardcore embo band at the Yucca North. Doors open at 7, show at 8. Cost is $24. You must be 21 or over to attend. Twin Sick, dance music duo from Minnesota at the Orpheum Theater, 7 p.m., and that's $24. Finally, on Easter Sunday, we have an Easter brunch, a festive meal at Silver Pines Restaurant at the Little America Hotel, 10 to 3, $39 for children, $95 for adults. High Country Humane Adoption Event, meet, play, and adopt canine companions at the Dark Sky Brewing Company, 1 to 4, and that's free. And that will do it. I could keep reading on and on, but we have run out of time. Thank you so much for listening. And this is Kathleen, and I hope everyone has a wonderful weekend, and I will read to you next week. Thanks for listening.